Tonight we'll continue our series in Orthodox Catechism. We're going through the Ten Commandments. And 2 weeks ago we talked about thou shalt not steal and what that prohibits. And today, tonight, we'll talk about how we keep this commandment, not to earn salvation, obviously, but how what does it mean to please God in this way? And it centers on working. Of course, work and business has been a topic of hot conversation the last several months. And the next several weeks, Lord willing, on Sunday morning, we're going to talk a lot about it too, because 2 Thessalonians 3 gets into this subject. And as you go up and down Baltimore or anywhere in the city or here nationally, I think you see help wanted signs. Even I saw at McDonald's saying they were interviewing $12 an hour starting salary. Or heard some of the men talking about how they weren't getting their garbage picked up because they don't have enough garbage truck drivers. And when they called to complain about it, they tried to get them to apply for the job. That even the managers are in the trucks because they are so short-staffed. And this is in various aspects of our society where people are not working. If you receive the Crier here in town, the front page from Tuesday's paper had reasons why people are not working. From anywhere from they want to work remote and keep working from remote, to they're maybe fearful of getting sick, or they feel like they don't have enough daycare, or they don't think they're getting paid enough, and the list goes on. Why people aren't getting to go back to work, and of course, one of the subjects is the government's incentive not to work for many. Well, you see why this is an important subject. It's practical, it's simple, but it's something that God providentially wants us to hear. So as we think about an Orthodox catechism and this eighth commandment, what are those things that God commands when he says, thou shalt not steal? And it's this, that with my power I help and further the commodities and profit of my neighbor, and that I so deal with him as I would desire to be dealt with myself. I am required to do my work plainly and faithfully, that I may thereby help others who are distressed with any need or calamity. So there are two things we're going to look at. First, the golden rule of economics. Matthew 7:12, Jesus said, so whatever you wish that others would do to you, so also do to them, for this is the law and the prophets, that we should want others to be treated as we want to be treated. And so, when we think about economics, work, dealing with other people, other businesses, running our own businesses, we would want to use equal weights and opportunities for all. We wouldn't want to use a different weight scale for a certain group of people than versus others. We wouldn't want opportunities for some section of the society, but that those same opportunities wouldn't be availed to others. And that this is a foundation to economics. Or there should be the equality of opportunity, but that does not mean there will be an equality of outcome. Proverbs 21 verse 3 says, to do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. So how do we, in a righteous and just way, work, run a business, be a homemaker, be a good student? Well, we should not covet or envy others. This person makes more money. This person has a bigger house. This person has more success. And envy that and wish that those people would have evil done to them, that they would trip and fall, and that would be a ruin to them. Instead, we should be responsible for what we do with our own hands. And second, we should be content with what God has given us. I grew up wanting to play in the NFL. God gave me equality of opportunity, but not of outcome. Why? Because I'm 5'8". I can't run a 40 in less than 5 seconds. The best I could do was bench press 300 pounds once. I could squat 440 pounds once. But when I did that, I weighed 225 pounds and I was slow as a snail. I was able to start in college at D3, which is not a scholarship school, D1 scholarship, and have a nice time, but I didn't have the athletic prowess and the natural given abilities to succeed in the NFL. To even come close. I had equality of opportunity, but not of outcome. Let's give an example of this, a controversial one, but it's an example, and that is affirmative action. I'm taking this from Wayne Grudem's book on politics, and he has a section on it. Affirmative action was put into place, I don't know, the 1970s, 80s, where to overcome the racial discrimination of the past, there was going to be positive racial discrimination towards people who were African American in order to see more of those people to get into positions, especially government positions. However, the data and stats, and then also you look at what the Bible says, and showing partiality, have shown that this has actually done the opposite of what it intended. Wayne Grudem writes, "One disadvantage of affirmative action policies is that they are inherently discriminatory against the groups that are not favored by the policy." So if you're wanting to have a certain percentage of people who are black, and in order to do that, you have to negate white people who maybe are equal or better in test scores, then you're not doing it based upon performance, you're doing it partly based upon a person's skin color. One example comes from the New Haven Fire Department in Connecticut. They had a test to have their firefighters get promoted from a lieutenant rank to captain. There were 118 applicants, 56 of them passed, but only the top scorers were eligible of the 56 to get the promotion. Of the top scorers, 17 were white and 2 were Hispanic. There were 27 black men, or 27 black women and women, who passed, but they did not obtain the top scores, so they were not deserving of the promotion based upon the criteria at the beginning of the test. However, because of the results, the city of New Haven threw them out and then used different criteria after the fact in order to make sure people who were black would get promoted. Well, that case was taken to the Supreme Court of the United States, and in 2009, it declared by a 5-4 decision that their actions were wrong. You can't have a test, and then when you don't like the results, get rid of the test and institute a new test to get the results you want. It is not fair or equal. Ultimately, in performing jobs and tasks, it should be based upon who is the best at those jobs and tasks, not based upon a person's color of their skin. Wayne Grudem gives another example. Another result of affirmative action policies in law schools, for example, is that there are actually fewer black attorneys today than there would otherwise would have been. So the top law schools made it their purpose to admit a certain percentage of black students. However, to meet that certain percentage, they had to admit some black students who, based upon their credentials alone, would not have normally been admitted to the law school if they were white or some other color. Therefore, they probably would have been admitted to a second-tier or third-tier law school, but since they were admitted to a first-tier law school, they didn't have the academic skill set to be able to succeed at that first-tier law school. So ultimately what happened is it resulted in lower percentage of black graduates, and only 45% of blacks who entered law school passed the bar on the first attempt, whereas 78% of whites did. And eventually only 57% of blacks ever passed the bar. And so an attempt to try to help people and try to get more people who are of a certain skin color, what actually happened is people who didn't have the prerequisite skill set to succeed in that environment were placed in that environment and they didn't perform. Instead, it would have been better as if they would have got into a second-tier law school where they were around people who were at the same academic standing, and they could thrive in that environment, and then that would be an on-ramp to be able to pass the bar. So how do we look at this? Well, part of keeping the commandment of thou shalt not steal is that when we work, there should be an equality of opportunity, not an equality of outcome. The debate's going on now is people want an equality of outcome. It's no fair that some people have more money than others. Well, yes, it is. Some people have skills that are more marketable or more specialized than others. Some people are willing to go through the training and hardship to be able to get those certain skills and knowledge that other people don't want to do because maybe they don't want to have those student loans or they're not interested in that job career and they want to do something else. And based upon those choices, there's a different outcome in money. But there's also a different outcome in lifestyle because you can make a lot of money and still be very stressed and have very little free time. So these are all things people need to understand. What communism or socialism tries to ensure is that there's an equality of outcome. Everyone gets the same wage at the end of the day. It has the same amount of stuff. Whereas a capitalistic system says, no, we want to have equality of opportunity, and based upon your skill set and how hard you work, you can forge your path ahead. Another example of how this should work is with blind bids for governmental contracts. This has been the way a lot of things are done, that you don't put your name as a company or as a person on the bid, but that it is covered in a sealed envelope so that they look at the contract not knowing who it comes from. That way there's not kickbacks to people who donate to a certain political party's apparatus or who maybe has a brother who's mayor of the city. This also prohibits insider trading. Remember Martha Stewart many years ago? She was put in jail because she knew information about the company before it went public, and based upon that information, she made trades that benefited her when people who were in the public did not know that information, and so that is cheating. And so she was able to game the system to get an advantage in making money that if you or I were trading in the stock market could not do. Also, this means that we should rejoice with those who rejoice. When people succeed, when people do well, when we see especially businesses thrive, we should not envy or be covetous of them. But praise God for those things that are taking place. And if you are a business owner, this also means we should treat customers as we would want to be treated. If you went into a store and you didn't get the product you wanted, you'd want them to correct it. In the same way, if you're a business owner who's a Christian, you'd want to correct that if there was a problem or issue that took place. You'd want to be fair to people. If they asked you questions on advice, you want to tell them the right questions and answers and not try to do so in order to profit and steer them to a product that they may not need. So these are all ways that we can work this in showing love to our neighbor as Christians. The second point, though, besides the golden rule of economics, is that we need to work in order to keep this commandment. Ephesians 4:28 says, let the thief no longer steal. So that's what we talked about 2 weeks ago. Don't steal. Don't take. Don't steal from a bank. Don't steal a candy bar. Don't plagiarize from someone on a test. Don't do any of these things. Instead, it says in Ephesians 4:28, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands. Notice honest work. There's some work which is not honest. One example would be prostitution. Or selling drugs on the street. That would not be honest work, but honest work with one's own hands so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. So we need to put off stealing and we need to put on work and labor. That work is a good thing. Proverbs 14:23 says, In all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. So if all we do is just talk, but not actually start doing our job and working, we're going to go to poverty. There are people who really like to talk a lot, but they don't get much done at the end of the day. Or 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12, Paul tells them to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your own hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. So he says, work, take up labor to help yourself. That way you're not dependent financially on other people to support you and your needs. To labor also means to do so diligently. In our instant microwave society, we want things this way, zap. That's why the lottery is such a popular thing. And yet, I mean, the odds are astronomical to win the lottery. But there's a chance. And people start dreaming. Oh, I won't have to work anymore. I have all this time, all this freedom. There have been shows chronicling people who hit it big, and guess what happens? They have all this money, and it ruins them. It ruins their family, their kids get into drugs and, you know, drunkenness, and they die. And maybe they feel pointless and meaningless because now they don't have something to do when they get up in the morning. So we need to be diligent. Proverbs 13:11 says, "Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase." If we're trying to hit it big, get the big jackpot, it's going to go like that. But if you are consistent, week after week, month after month, year after year, then you can, by God's grace, provide for yourself and have leftover. Proverbs 10, verse 4, "A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich." So it's diligence that we must attain, we must go for, continuing to work, that work is a good thing for us. Or Proverbs 13, 4, "The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied." That there are these children books about the animals, and you know, some of the animals are playing all summer and having all this fun, and they're going through the meadows, and they're playing tag and doing all this stuff. But there's one animal, maybe this one squirrel, who's not playing. And the other squirrels are saying to that one, "Why aren't you playing with us? You're such a fun sucker. What are you doing?" And the squirrel's like, "I'm getting ready for winter." And then the squirrel's gathering nuts, preparing a place for winter, having bedding. And then when winter comes, guess what happens? Those squirrels that were playing, that were going through the meadows, are shivering and cold, and they knock on the other squirrel's door and says, "Could you please give me your nuts?" I'm like, "No, you didn't prepare." Proverbs 28:19 says, "Whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits will have plenty of poverty." Boy, if you follow the get-rich scheme, if you follow hobbies that, I mean, lead to nothing and just completely encompasses your time, it will lead you to ruin. There was an example when I lived in Iowa. There's a couple who were in their 60s, and they owned a farm. And the husband, every couple years, went into a new venture. And it was one of those things where this is going to be the new thing. That's going to be it. And after 30 years of doing that, every new venture failed. He thought it was going to be this rich, get-rich-fast thing. And they were in their 60s, and the family farm that they were living on, they were now close to having foreclosed on them, because instead of trying to find the next new venture and trying to see if it would get rich, he should have went to a different direction of just trying to accumulate little by little over the course of 30 years. And he said the reason why he was doing it is because he wanted to try to make a lot of money so he can give a lot of the money to the church. Well, I mean, there's a could be a good motivation, but also The church doesn't necessarily need one individual in order to survive. It's not based upon one person. So besides being diligent, we also need to be skillful. There's a great blessing, Proverbs says, to those who have good skill. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. Boy, if you take pride in what you do and do a great job as a craftsman or what your skill set is, God will bless you and you will be honored because of the way in which you are using your skills to benefit others. Besides being skillful, we should be generous. 1 Timothy 6:18 and 19, it says that of the rich they are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. So this is saying that there is no such thing as being sinfully rich. You can be rich and not be sinful. Instead, you shouldn't trust in your riches as if it is your source of peace, but trust in God, because riches are fleeting, and that you should be ready to be generous to others, especially to the brethren. In our day now, I think for workers, there is such an opportunity to work. Not as parallel, but there are some similarities. Back when the plague hit in the 1300s, there was an overabundance of workers, and because of that, it meant that their importance was very low. But when the plague came through, of course, that was awful, and it killed 30 to 50% of the population. One of the after effects of the plague was that the workers who were at the bottom of the totem pole now were fewer in number, so the different landowners were competing with one another to have those workers, and over the course of time, that became the foundation for the middle class over the course of the next 100 years. The opposite took place after World War II, as more people went into the workforce and as our economy changed from a typical man working and wife stay at home, now it became a two-parent working household. What happened is you have a huge influx of more and more workers into the economy, and what that happened is it deflated wages. Well, now we're to the point where there isn't enough workers, and we see what's happening is that wages are going up. Of course, prices for other things are going up. And so now is a great time to work in the United States. If you are diligent, if you are skillful, if you have aptitude, you can find a job and do well. And, I mean, you may not even need a college education depending upon what type of work you want to go into, that you could have a productive career. So how do we apply this? Well, first, the negative. Do not steal. We should not take. We should not scheme. Instead, we should work to the glory of God. And this means more than having a job title. If you are a stay-at-home wife or mother, this applies to you as well. You don't have to have a corporate job title in order to work. In fact, I mean, and you're doing a great deal of service even though you don't get a W-2 and a paycheck. And so let us not think that work is always equated with going somewhere else, having a job, and that way. There are many different avenues in which we can work. And that's why, children, you can work too. Your school is starting up. That's work. Treat it as work. The habits that you are using there is going to form your habits long term. Whether you eventually get employed by another employer, have your own business, or you stay at home as a mom. When you do work, be diligent. Arrive early, stay late. I remember working for the Illinois Department of Revenue. I couldn't believe how many people would, it'd be 8:31 and they're running in, trying to sign the sign-in paper, going over to get on their computer, and they didn't start taking phone calls until 8:40. And they stole 10 minutes. of time every day. And others of us would get there at 8:15, turn our computer on, go to the restroom, get our water, sit down, and then at 8:30 came on, we were starting to take phone calls. We should give 100% in our work because we are ultimately working for God to glorify Him. It's not just for ourselves, but God is our Lord and our boss. So we should take pride in what we do, even if what we are doing is laborious, is the same thing over and over, can be boring, but knowing that this is a way that we can love one another. And gosh, we think, well, I don't want to work for the trash company and take out garbage. But man, when there's no man to take out the garbage, we'd really miss him. I mean, that those men and women are loving us. They're getting paid, but that's a way that you can love your neighbor, because by taking away the garbage, it reduces disease. It makes things look better, smell better. You don't have it accumulating. You're not going to have animals getting into the trash because it's being picked up on a regular basis. We don't have... the list goes on and on of people and how this works. Also, we need to have the attitude that to accumulate wealth over time and not try to get the quick fix, not to try to hit it fast, not to try to have the big balloon and have the windfall of money. But most times that is an illusion that ends in disaster. And finally, we should be generous and help others out. Kent Hughes, who was a pastor, said this: "Every time I give, I declare that money does not control me. Perpetual generosity is a perpetual deification of money." Of course, we have to be wise in how we give, because sometimes we can give money and that can... encourage the very thing that we don't want. We want people to work. And know of a situation where someone who's in their early 30s and still living at home with their parents. And it's because the parents haven't cut them off and said, you have to go and get a job and work. And that's actually inhibiting them from living as God would have them to live. So we have to have wisdom in these things. But ultimately, God has created us, and He's created us with one of our purposes being to work. Well, let's now go and pray together, the women upstairs and the men downstairs.